Hello and welcome to Midwest Writers Room. Our mission is to encourage, educate, and celebrate writers of the Midwest. I'm Luella Schmidt.
And I'm Ken Humphrey. Today's Chapter Break episode features Evelyn Ann Casey and her latest publication, Candlewood, which came out in February 2025.
Evelyn Ann Casey writes stories filled with grace and gumption. A love of language and storytelling grew from her Chicago roots in a multi-ethnic neighborhood filled with Irish brogues and pubs, Sicilian music and cannoli, and the Yiddish banter of delis. Evelyn's poetry, essays, and flash fiction are published in Midwest Review, Medium.com, Potato Soup Journal, and elsewhere. She worked in government relations in Milwaukee and Madison before managing outreach programs in healthcare at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. When not exploring locales near and far with her husband, Evelyn attends music and theater events and volunteers with local reading programs.
Let's take a look at the novel. Candlewood is set in the St. Croix River Valley in the 1970s. When Meg joins her Catholic alma mater's parish staff, she soon finds herself fending off the menacing priest from prayer group. A different kind of challenge looms when Salt of the Earth Father Andy is assigned to the parish. Their friendship heats up. Meg knows the rules and is loath to add another sin to her family's litany of taboos. Meanwhile, the priest from prayer group goes unchecked. Meg must confront the boys' club of her church, find a God she can trust, and reckon with her deepest desires.
Oof, no small feat there. Welcome, Evelyn, to Midwest Writers Room. We're so pleased to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's great to be with you. And it's especially poignant talking about this book today that has the backdrop of the Catholic Church when, you know, just yesterday we learned of Pope Francis's death.
Yeah, very timely. Yep.
Very, very timely. Yeah. Before we dive into the book, my one piece of trivia that I always come up with when we talk about like French Polynesian is that taboo and tattoo are the only words from the French Polynesian language that made it into English. I learned that when we were down there. Got a tattoo.
Taboo and tattoo.
While I was learning that.
I did not know that.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about the book itself. Take us back. Where did the story come from?
Well, I'll tell you, it was when I was growing up in Chicago, amidst the Irish pubs and cannoli, my family had a close family friend who was a priest. You know, he was like an uncle to me. So he was over for dinner all the time. And lo and behold, when he turned maybe late 40s, early 50s, he fell in love with a woman. Everybody kind of kept it under wraps. Everybody knew, but nobody talked about it, that sort of thing. They actually thought about getting married, but it would mean that he would have to leave the church because Catholic priests cannot marry. At the time, they were very involved, both of them, in the civil rights movement. And he had a strong voice in, you know, in that movement. So they decided that they would just keep their relationship under wraps. It would be better. He would be able to be more effective if he stayed a priest. So that's what happened. You know, that was just the way it was. I didn't question it too much at the time. But when the abuse crisis came up in the last couple of decades, you know, and I started thinking about them and asking myself, why in the world would the Catholic Church let go healthy priests who, you know, just wanted to marry and protect these very unhealthy priests who were abusing children and teenagers? And the more, you know, I thought about that, it became a really burning question that I needed to explore. And that's how the book came about. My old family friends make a cameo in the book. Both of them are deceased at this point, but and they're much disguised in terms of names and whatnot. The book is fiction, but people will notice, I'm sure, familiar figures. You know, they're just them stereotypes per se, but archetypes of the Catholic priesthood.
That controversy around, you know, the Catholic priest issue has just been going on for so long. I remember, I mean, I'm not Catholic, and I was never part of that real community, but I remember all the way back, Sinead O'Connor, when she ripped up the thing, thinking, what is she doing, right? But little do we know, all the way back then to today, what she actually knew. Good on you for kind of, I guess, tackling a real conflicting question. How do you let the good ones go and keep the bad ones? You know, how do you reconcile that? So
it takes courage to write. Anytime you're writing truth to power, I think it takes some courage. So well done.
Yes. When the book, I mean, first off, how long did the book take from the time you actually essentially penciled your first word to you put down the pencil and said, I'm ready to publish this?
A long time. In fact, it is difficult. It was a very difficult topic to write on because, growing up Catholic, I know the beauty of the church, but wow, it was really awful to have to deal with and then dig into for writing the book, the bad side too, the underside of the church. So I put the thing away literally three times. And so over the course of probably had the idea 10 years before it actually came to fruition. But it was once I decided to get serious about it, and I started going to conferences and found a wonderful mentor in Lori Shear, who was at the University of Wisconsin at the time. Then it was about 5 years.
I ask that question often just because there are people who feel like they need to rip out a book in a year, right? They hear about people who wrote a book in a year, 2 years. And I think it's much more common just to kind of noodle and sit and let a book percolate in your head. And, not unusual to take 10, 15, 20 years to actually get it done. The actual writing may only take a couple of years, but the development of it just sat there for, a couple of decades. So I want to make people feel like they're not under pressure to crank out a book in a year because they hear everybody else doing it.
Because they hear Ken Humphrey does it,
Yeah.
for example.
Yeah, but I'm not normal. There's something wrong with my wiring. So let's talk about your publication then. What was that path like?
I knew that I wanted to go the traditional route because although I know a number of people who've put out wonderful books and done all of the editing, distribution, printing of it themselves, I knew that I did not want to take that long road of learning how to do all of that. I queried for a while, looking for agents, and I got some wonderful notes back that they liked my writing, but it just wasn't in their bailiwick to, to make a sale on it. So they encouraged me, send me your next book, that kind of thing. But I was starting to get discouraged when I went to a conference, and I did know that several other writer friends had gone the small press route, which was something kind of new to me. That's not talked about so much. It's sort of like an underground network of small presses that's really robust as I got into it. And fortunately, one of the small presses, Henschel House, was at this conference, and I pitched to her. And I also pitched to an agent, and frankly, both of them got back to me and were interested in the book. But Henschel House was, I just knew that I would like working with Kira Henschel very much. And, we started talking, and a year later, the book was out. So I
Nice.
have to say it was a great
Yeah, we've
experience.
had Kira on the show a couple of years ago.
I
She came on
know.
and did an episode
Shout
for
out,
us.
Kara.
It
Hi,
was great.
Kara.
Yeah, it's kind of when you talk about small presses, it's almost like the small press speakeasy network, right? You have to
Yeah,
know,
I
you
feel
knock on
like.
a door in a certain way, or you see a symbol on the side of a building, say, oh, that must be a small press publishing house. I'm gonna go get in there.
I feel
That's
like
how I
that's a
liken
not a
it.
great thing that it feels underground and not that people aren't aware of it. To me, like it's, the difference between buying your stuff at Walmart or at the local gift store. Like there's always huge businesses and small businesses. And I guess I don't want those little presses to be unknown. I want them to be hollered and be like the first place people want to go. Wouldn't that be a lovely world?
It'd be a lovely world.
I agree. So along the way then, besides the normal publishing path to publishing, trials and issues that we're all very familiar with, any other hurdles?
Well, I would have to say I had written poetry and short stories for a long time. Part of my job was doing public relations in my actual day job. And so I'd written a lot of newsletters and, a lot of nonfiction type things, a lot of healthcare, broken down for lay language, that sort of thing. But learning how to write fiction and just the structure of a long story of a novel, it was how to keep it going without getting saggy in the middle. I really grew as a writer, but I had so much to learn, more than I could have imagined. It was great. I mean, we have wonderful resources, here in Wisconsin, with the Wisconsin Writers Association and the UW here and Madison Writers Studio, all of those. Just and I thankfully availed myself of that. Without that, the book would not have happened. I would also
Something to have
say,
resources, but you have to use them,
right.
right? You have to find them and use them. So good for you.
Exactly. I would say one other thing, and that's as far as a hurdle, I did a lot of interviewing of priests and sisters and ex-priests and married couples who had left the church and some who stayed. And learning those stories, I won't call it a hurdle exactly. I learned things I would not have guessed. Let's put it that way. I learned that although the headlines were about youngsters being abused, which is, terrible and appropriate that they would get the headlines, but that in fact, the reason that other priests and superiors and pastors and bishops didn't speak up so much was because of their own widely, I mean, maybe 50, they're, one of the people who does a lot of research on priests has the saying that 50% of priests are doing something inappropriate 50% of the time. So it's kind of like, okay, we always think if a woman gets involved with a priest that A, it's her fault, B, that it's, consensual, and C, that a sin against celibacy and the rules, when that's not always the case. And this is across denominations. There's a great study out of Baylor University, that looks at ministers and rabbis and Catholic as well as Catholic priests. And the fact of the matter is that at least 10% of any denomination will tell you that they are aware of irresponsible or immature priests and women, having encounters that they shouldn't be having, whether wanted or unwanted. The problem is then that with priests, especially knowing their own shortcomings, they were less likely, much less likely to come forward and point the finger at anybody else, especially if it
Glass
was
house syndrome.
suspicion or rumor rather than anything they actually witnessed or knew.
Sadly, it's probably unsurprising and distressing in equal measure.
Exactly.
Combo question on the book then. It doesn't appear that you need necessarily to be Catholic to appreciate it because it has kind of seems that or themes that transcend that. But what is the closest comp to your book?
There's well, Publishers Weekly did a nice review of the book, and they put me in the in they named the comps of Emma Donahue's Wonder, which is she's a wonderful writer. She was just at Irish Fest headquarters a couple of weeks ago, and I went down to see her, and we connected and had a wonderful chat. She's got a new book out now, The Paris Express. That has some Catholic roots to it, but again, you don't need to be Catholic. It's sort of like you don't have to be Italian to appreciate The Godfather, that kind of thing. The way I often describe the book is Fleabag meets the Conclave.
I
And
can't believe you brought up Fleabag. I love that
I
show.
know. Well, she was, a 20-something getting involved with a priest who, they have their thing. And, my character very much has to find her own way, just as Fleabag always has to find her own way. And,
That's great. That is
yeah. And then,
great.
of course, The Conclave, that was a wonderful book and movie, which now we're going to be seeing in real life as we go into the selecting, a new pope. Fleabag meets the Conclave. It's all about, the secrets and intrigue and forbidden love and those sorts of things. Breaking the rules, but finding your way.
So one more question before we get into the reading. Evelyn Ann Casey is your pen name. Is there any significance to that specific name?
Well, the biggest reason I chose it was because My real name is difficult to pronounce and spell, and I didn't want that to be a problem for my readers or people like you who have to talk to me and figure out how to say this name. So I did want something that was slightly Irish but not over the top. So Casey was, I just went through the list and there it was. It was like, yeah, that's a good name. And Evelyn was actually the name of a good neighbor of ours. And I didn't know anybody else named Evelyn. And I was just always loved that name. So there we are. Anne is my true middle name.
The beauty of pen names, we get to just create them from scratch based on our own
Right.
criteria. All
Yeah.
right, Luella, are we ready?
Yeah, so listeners, it's the part we've all been waiting for. Evelyn is going to read, I believe, the beginning pages, right, of Candlewood for us.
Chapter 1, Flicker. Rain glanced off my shoes like spilled secrets. A June downpour in Minnesota's St. Croix Valley left the street a blur of wet shadows. For the first time since graduating last year, I stepped off the curb in front of old St. Gabriel's arched wooden doors and crossed over to attend prayer group at the Campus Ministry Center. Students clustered in the back of the chapel near the faux marble Madonna, while faculty sorted themselves out in pecking order. On the altar, the ever-present beeswax candle flickered inside a tall hurricane glass, like Morse code from a ship's signal lamp. God is here. I settled into an empty pew and rubbed the bare spot at the base of the fourth finger on my left hand. Only 6 months ago, the promise of marriage and family sparkled. I watched the flame pulse. At the last amen, I roused to check my watch. If I hurried, I could meet friends at the coffee house for Rocky Mountain High Night. When I looked up, Father Darren's intense dark eyes were trained on me, one of the reasons I stopped going to prayer group senior year. A treat to see you again, Meg. Heard you're visiting the sick for St. Gabe's now. I nodded a quick acknowledgement and stood to leave. Faculty women circled the rookie priest, who looked like he spent more time in the gym than on his knees. They gushed over his homily on evil. As I passed, his hand slithered around my waist. I flinched and he dropped his arm. His ploys for attention rivaled a barfly's, but he wore the collar. I told myself he was harmless. Mrs. Gregg eyed the maneuver, then looked away. She might have been the object of his attention 30 years ago. Without missing a beat, Father Darren delivered the punchline to a joke, something about a banana and Eve's apple. I went to the coat rack to get my trench. Father Darren caught up with me. Stay a few minutes? Want to show you something. Born and bred Catholic, one does not say no to a priest. Sure, what's up? Let's take the shortcut. He motioned for me to follow. We left the gleaming limestone walls of the chapel and entered a dimly lit corridor. Father Darren said the passage led to the fellowship hall, a stippled length of sallow paint between all that was sacred and everything else. My eyes took a minute to adjust. I hurried to keep up. Halfway down the hall, he stopped short and I stumbled into him. He missed my lips, but nicked a kiss on the cheek, a move any two-bit blind date might make, not a priest. My neck went taut. I stepped out of range. He slicked back his coarse jet hair. Only a kiss, no big deal, relax. His furtive dodge left me clammy. What was it you wanted to show me? He moved ahead and pulled a pack of Winchesters from his pocket. Must have thought they were still cool. Nobody I knew smoked the little cigars anymore. He lit one and offered it to me, like the man in their ads. When I refused, he blew a smoke ring. I let a safe number of steps fall between us. If I bolted back to the chapel, everyone from prayer group would be gone by now. And if he pursued me, though no taller than myself, his thick build could fell me like a sapling. Was I overreacting? An exit sign flashed at the end of the corridor. The fellowship hall on the other side. only a few more yards.
A lot of tension right there. You could feel that.
Yeah, you don't waste any time in getting right to it.
That's what they said.
That is what they teach us, isn't
Yep.
it? So tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can find your book.
Okay, I do have a website. It's evelynanncasey.com. So that's pretty easy to find. The book can be found anywhere books are sold. It's at Barnes and Noble, hopefully soon to be at libraries. Also, Amazon, you can order it. You cannot buy it from my website, but I do have direct links to each of those. Also, Mystery to Me still has some signed copies from when I had my launch there. For anyone who's listening, not in the Madison area, they can go to the link for bookshop.org, and they can select whatever bookshop they want, independent bookshop to buy it from.
Yeah, we're a big fan of bookshop.org too. So
Yeah.
yeah, listeners, if you're looking for a way to avoid Amazon or the big guys, it's a nice way to send a little money to independent bookstores and the authors themselves.
Any appearances or book signings scheduled for you?
A couple are coming up with I'll be at the Hedberg Public Library. They have a really, really nice large book festival in Janesville. And then in Middleton has a book fair. Middleton, Wisconsin has a book fair coming up in August. So those are for sures. And Arcadia is thinking about it right now. So I think they're going to try to line up a couple of people, local authors at the same time.
Actually,
So.
I'll see you down at HPO. I'm doing a panel there with Kristen Oakley, I believe, and Lori, or no, Christine DeSmet. We're on a
Right.
panel there, so we'll see you there.
Fabulous.
Well, I want to take time now to thank Evelyn for coming on to introducing our readers to, I'm sorry, introducing our listeners to Candlewood. And thanks to everybody out there for listening to the Midwest Writers Room. I'm Ken Humphrey.
And I'm Luella Schmidt. Words ignite imaginations and spark change. Never underestimate the power of storytelling.
Midwest Writers Room is a production of the Wisconsin Writers Association. Writing and editing by Luella Schmidt and Ken Humphrey. Sound design and editing by Ken Humphrey. Music for the Midwest Writers Room is written by Michael Ramirez C. For more information, please visit wiwrite.org/podcast. Thank you.